This is Pippa Hudson on Lunch.
October is Dyslexia Awareness Month, and in our Family Matters segment today, I want to focus on what this learning disorder involves and what kind of challenges it poses, particularly to children who are still in school. I'm really looking forward to hearing from our expert guest, who I'll introduce in just a moment, but also to hearing from you. If you've had first-hand experience of dyslexia yourself, perhaps you have supported a child who does, and you want to talk to us about how easy it was to get to diagnosis, what kind of accommodations have been possible to support your child, if any at all, and what the impact has been on your life or their life, both educational and emotional. I'd love for you to share your story by either calling us on 021-446-0567 or leaving a voice note on 072-567-1567. If you are dyslexic, you may know already that you are certainly not alone and, secondly, in very famous company. On the list of famous dyslexics over history, Albert Einstein, Richard Branson, John Lennon, John F. Kennedy, Tom Cruise, Whoopi Goldberg, Jamie Oliver, and Steven Spielberg. That's a pretty talented list to draw some inspiration from. And to talk to us a little bit more about how it's possible to thrive despite a dyslexia diagnosis, I'm really delighted to welcome our guest, Kaylee Naidoo, who is a clinical psychologist and the co-lead on the Literacy and Dyslexia course, who works at Bella Vista Share, which is the resource centre of the Bella Vista Remedial School in Johannesburg. Kaylee, great to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Papa, and good to be with you and our Cape Town friends.
I really appreciate your time today. Kaylee, I think most of our listeners at least are vaguely aware of the fact that dyslexia involves some kind of challenge in learning to read and spell, that there is a sense of mixing up letters or mixing up words in some way. But could you give us a slightly more scientific explanation, please?
I hope so. So it's not about mixing letters or reversing letters. It is about children struggling with the sound system of a language and breaking the sound system and mapping that onto letters. So that's in everyday language, we talk about it as letter sound correspondence. It's the beginning of knowing your alphabet. It's the beginning of learning phonics. And then applying that ability to break words into smaller sounds, blending that together. That is what reading entails. Spelling is the reverse. We call that encoding, where you have to think about the word, think about the sound, and how that maps onto letters. Whereas with reading, it is how the letters map onto the sounds of a word.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an activity that happens within milliseconds in the brain, and it connects various parts of the brain that wasn't evolutionary designed for reading. It was designed for other functions like talking and comprehension, oral comprehension, and vision. So reading maps onto other existing functions in the brain, and those areas of the brain that, in terms of evolution, was designed for the specific function now needs to come together for reading, because reading is both a visual, a phonological activity, and a meaning activity. So it includes the decoding, it includes the meaning, it includes the sound system, and it includes being able to see the word versus.
Yeah.
But it is not a visual difficulty. It's much more complex than that. But what the research suggests, it's very strongly linked to the ability to play with the sounds and the smallest unit of sounds in a word, and then linking that to a symbol, and being able to do that automatically or unconsciously, like driving, where you can drive while having a fight and getting from Cape Town to the ocean and not knowing that you've actually driven.
Yeah.
Or having a deep conversation, it becomes so automatic that you can manage your gears, your accelerator, your brakes. And that's what needs to happen with reading. So being able to see, to break down, to put together needs to happen. And it's scientifically proven that just that visual and the phonological putting the word together happens in 300 milliseconds.
Wow.
And then at about 400 milliseconds, we say, aha, that word means reachable. but you have to almost say that word in your mind's eye. And that's when the meaning explodes. So reachable could have many connotations for you. It could be reach for a dream. Is my goal reachable? Can I reach something on at a higher level?
Yeah.
So you can see that just in a simple word like that, how many the process involved is looking at the letters, the sound, putting it all together, doing that automatically, meaning being generated. And then when you're reading, you're actually reading in context because you have to see how all these words make sense, because the meaning would vary depending on what are the surrounding words yeah. within a sentence or within a paragraph. And there's also the other side to reading is it involves a lot of working memory, and I don't think teachers think about that, or parents, being able to hold things in your mind and hold the meaning even as you read within a sentence, and that working memory becomes that much more taxed as you read a paragraph. But if you're not decoding, all your working memory is being allocated to decoding. So you have very little mental energy left to read for meaning.
Right.
And the same applies for writing. If you're struggling with spelling, and dyslexia essentially is a difficulty difficulty learning to accurately or with efficiency learn to read and spell. And that's simply what it means. Some children do have reversals that go beyond age 8, but it's more the confusion of the letters, because like a B and a D look so similar. A B and a D sound. Mm. It's where in the mouth we're making those sounds. So children often will confuse a G and a Q. But that's not a visual problem. It's because it's the symbolism that they're struggling with, and it's the sound system. So speech and language therapists often think about where the sound is made in your mouth. And the closer the sounds are in your mouth, particularly with the vowels, the more likely your children struggle to discriminate the sounds. Mm-hmm. So like an A and an E, a and an E is made in the back of your throat, and your mouth, the formation is very similar. So often that is what we do to help children to make that distinction in the letters and in the sounds and in their spelling and in their reading. That was a long answer to you.
It was a very comprehensive one, and you really helped us, I think, all visualize a much deeper understanding of what we're actually talking about. Now, do we know why some children develop dyslexia and others don't? Is there anything in our brain pathology or our brain chemistry or our genetics that predisposes one? Do we know what actually causes it?
So it is not a pathology. It is not a neurological. It's what we say, it's a neurodiversity of the brain. Mm-hmm. So nobody's brain is just exactly the same as another person. What we do know is that the connectivity for the dyslexic child, the connectivity is much greater in the right brain than in the left brain. And because reading is such a systematic process and spelling is systematic, it's a much more left brain activity, but you do need your right brain to put things together, to find the meaning, to see the whole. So the dyslexic child generally over relies on the right brain. And that is why we have some of these great thinkers. Mm. You know, they're good at thinking out of the box, but it doesn't mean every dyslexic child is gifted, like Steven Spielberg or Whoopi Goldberg. Albert Einstein, interestingly, there is controversy.
Oh, really?
Because, his language, he had a bit of echolalia and he didn't speak much. So there's a bit of controversy whether he was truly dyslexic or not. But, yeah, he's put in that same category as being dyslexic. I think his autobiography, the recent one, suggests that he might not have been dyslexic. might have been something different.
Okay.
But
the point, though, being, Kelly, sorry to interrupt, that it's definitely not a sign of any deficiency of intelligence. I think that's a really crucial thing to point out here. As much as you say it doesn't necessarily mean a child will be gifted in a particular way, it also doesn't mean that the child is stupid. These are two totally separate concepts we're talking here.
Exactly. The child is not stupid and the child is not lazy. Because, in fact, some of the greatest writers, like Philip Schultz, who's written the book My Dyslexia, and he teaches creative writing and he's a poet, and Agatha Christie, and some of our great journalists. We have an African journalist who has, I think he owns about 60% of the Mail and Guardian. He used to. He was severely dyslexic, and he comes from Zim. Because they struggle so much, it's a struggle with the printed word. It is not a struggle with oral language. It's just with print. Mm. So because they have had to overcome that difficulty with just language and learning to read and spell, they spend hours working and reading and rereading and being able to learn to decode. That oftentimes their career is in writing, because that's where they're putting all their energies, and they've learned to persevere. So they are not lazy, they are not stupid by any means. And it's not a lack of motivation.
Okay, that's
so important.
And it's
also known to run in families. So there is a genetic component.
Okay. Kelly, before we run out of time, we've only got 2 minutes left before the news, and I think really crucial to talk about where to turn to for help if you think that perhaps your child might be struggling with dyslexia. How would you know that, and who would you go to for a proper diagnosis?
Well, in our country, the only people able to diagnose are psychologists. So it would be educational psychologists. Then, strangely, our Health Professions Council allows medical practitioners to diagnose. So if you're going to a medical practitioner, I think it's best to go to like a pediatric neurologist or a developmental pediatrician, because they have got a better understanding than just a GP.
Okay.
Good people, too, that would be able to help you. Anybody that we've trained on our award in literacy and dyslexia, they trained, the teachers are trained as specialist teachers, and they get the British Dyslexia Association accreditation. But in our country, they can only identify you as being at risk of dyslexia. They're not able to diagnose.
Okay.
Speech and language therapist is a very good port of call. But again, even though they are health professionals, they can't diagnose. So anyone that, and we've trained across the country, we train across the world with our online course. Anyone who's graduated with our course, I think you're in good hands. So these specialist teachers, and then psychologists, and particularly educational psychologists, they have the understanding about how reading develops and the development of reading. So, but not all. But many of them that have been, that are close to reading and understanding the development of reading, they would be good people to go to. And then I must add that I think when parents pick up problems, trust your intuition. Because oftentimes parents are the first people to pick up the difficulty. And I've seen that whether you are literate or not literate, regardless of social and economic circumstances, oftentimes it's the parents that are completely on target. And they see the discrepancy between the child's oral language skills and then the struggle with reading. Mm. And that is a key indicator that something is not quite correct. The child struggles with learning to read and really struggles with spelling.
We have to leave it there. But Kelly, thank you so much for that really in-depth insight into dyslexia. You've been listening to Kelly Naidi on the line from Joburg, a clinical psychologist and the co-lead on the literacy and dyslexia course at Bella Vista Share. If you would like to read up more about their resources or reach out with further questions, the website to start from is bellavista.org.za.